been a whole lot busier than perhaps a lot of people thought. Remember when that big run on defensemen went last week, and we'd already seen a couple of other players move. The two New Jersey players went. You're like, oh, is there going to be anything left for us on Monday? There is plenty left for us on this Monday. Trade deadline passed about an hour ago, but teams are still lined up in the trade queue trying to get everything official. Flames have not made any of their three reported deals official as of yet. If you're just joining us, Corey Sarich, Ryan Pinder, Pat Steinberg around the table. The Flames acquiring Derek Forbert from the LA Kings, Eric Gustafson from the Chicago Blackhawks, and they send Brandon Davidson to the San Jose Sharks. All three of those acquisitions are defensemen, or all three of those transactions, rather, are for defensemen. Welcome back. As our coverage continues, we'll be joined by GM Brad Treliving at some point today, and lots to react to when it comes to around the NHL world. But it's funny, Corey, like we didn't know exactly how busy this day was going to be. You have been part of a deadline day deal just before, like a few days before the deadline when you got traded in March of 2000. But like, this is a lot of player movement on one afternoon, more than a lot of people thought we were going to see.
Yeah, I think for this day and age, it sure has been. It's been a kind of a steady flow. There's been some big names tossed around. There's been some side deals done. It's just had a little bit of everything. I feel like there was a time in my career, probably early to mid 2000s, when trade deadline would come and things would get hairy. Like, it would just go nuts. You'd be watching. I don't even know if there was a ticker back then. It's so long ago, but there would be, like, you'd be watching, trying to watch any kind of sports channel I'm pretty sure we were tucked in on the internet looking, and things were just, you know, streaming rapidly through. And then I feel like we've gone through this kind of into the early 2010s, trending towards the end of this decade, where things really got, there's a couple of trade deadlines where you're standing here and you're like, is anything going to happen ever?
Guys you'd never heard of are moving around.
And the blast seemed to always come in the last like hour. And then the trickle down, like we're waiting for now after the fact that the deadline's passed. So no, this one just had, it was entertaining. A little bit of everything. And it started, you know, a little over 48 hours before the deadline, with some action and some names being moved around. So there was a few teams out there that we were just talking before the break that were maybe a little quiet. I thought the Avalanche with some cap space might do something more drastic. The Maple Leafs were oddly quiet for how often we see and hear about them in the media. So there's a few teams not doing a lot out there, but yeah, a few teams did a lot.
You've been traded at a deadline or close to a deadline before, and you've been on NHL teams where the deadline is there and everybody is aware of what's going on. So take us through, like, what goes through a player's head, what goes through a locker room, and even what it's like to be dealt so late in the season.
For me, the first time it happened to me, I had no idea it was coming. I'd played the majority of the season for the Buffalo Sabres, and then I'd been sent to the minors, and we were very deep on defense there. There were guys by the names of Dmitry Kalinin, Brian Campbell, guys that had just cut their teeth in the league, like a Jay McKee. Other guys scrapping for spots were Jason Holland, Jean-Luc Grandpierre, myself. So
Was Rhett still there?
Retro got traded in the year before.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he was a deadline deal for Mike Wilson the year before in 1999. So I'm not mentioning Rhett because he was kind of already pegged as an NHL defenseman.
He'd been
in the league for a couple of years. So I'm just mentioning the guys that are vying for that sixth, maybe seventh spot with the Buffalo Sabres. And I had been sent down, played a couple weeks in the minors, and was bracing for a 3-3 in the AHL that night with a home away home on the docket, and got a call from Darcy Regier, and it kind of blew my mind. He said, thank you for your year of service and being part of the franchise since you were a draft pick, and good luck, traded you. He told me who I was traded with. I went with Brian Holzinger and Wayne Primeau. I think there was a pick involved as well. We were traded to the Tampa Bay Lightning for Chris Gratton. And he said, tomorrow you're going down there, you're playing, you'll be part of the lineup. I got a flight for you. You'll join these guys somewhere along the way, Holzinger and Primo, and you guys will all be playing tomorrow night in Tampa, which brand new gear, brand new teammates. I was ecstatic because I was out of the A again and back into the NHL, so I was pumped. Didn't even know where Tampa was. Knew they were god-awful. And then as I was flying in and looking at all the golf courses, I'm like, how am I going to play hockey down here? It was like...
See, this is the good news for Eric Gustafson today when he flies wherever. There's no, you're not worried about that distraction.
At least he's flying to the East Coast to start with. No.
Now, that year, Tampa finished the season 1947, 9-7. So they won just 19 games the year you were traded to the Tampa Bay.
Oh, we were awesome. We were super awesome the next year, too. For me, it was a great opportunity. We were terrible, which gave you the utmost hope that you could make this team where I just described the Buffalo Sabres were fairly deep on defense. But it's a quick turnaround in your life. You pack up, you're gone, you've got a new set of teammates. And the great thing about the hockey community, though, is you're going from one dressing room to another, and they all, for all the ones I've played in, have a very similar feel. And hockey players, for me, out of the, I don't know a lot of athletes in the other professional sports, but they are class A guys, very humble human beings. And it's an easy adaptation. You know, you go in and people welcome you with open arms, and it's my transition was super easy the couple times that I've had to go through it. So it's a testament to the hockey community out there.
So put yourselves in the shoes of players for the Flames now. They're in Boston. There's no significant deletion from this group. Only Brandon Davidson, who is up due to injuries, is deleted from this club. And you see two NHL everyday defensemen arrive. Is there multiple ways to interpret this? Do you have any guess at all about the feel, or is that just totally different player to player at this point?
For me, I think their forwards and their core up front have probably a sense of relief. You know, not too sure what's going on, and now it's come and gone and nothing happened. So let's get on with it. And like I said, I think Brad Treliving set the table for this group for the core, be it that just the forwards or everyone included with the defense. And it's like, here you go. It's your team. Let's see how this thing ends. Let's finish. Let's write this end chapter.
I'd be really curious if you are in the situation of a Michael Stone or an Oliver Shillington, and you've been playing regular NHL minutes, in Shillington's case basically all year, significant NHL minutes of late for Stone, then all of a sudden two guys, regular NHL defensemen, are brought in. Now what are you thinking? Like, is it a nervous time? Are you upset? Are you frustrated? Like, what's going through their heads?
Well, I considered myself kind of definitely a team first player, do anything for the team, and I would be frustrated. Because you, as a player, all you want to do is play. That's the bottom line. Any way you can get out there and contribute, you can't contribute. You can contribute as a practice player and making sure that you're pushing your teammates that are going to play the games. But if you're a guy that was getting some, your role had been increased, like Michael Stone, like Oliver Shillington, like, you know, you're starting to feel a little bit like a regular, you're starting to feel like a piece of the puzzle. It's a bit of a slight. It's a bit of a kick. But if it's in the best interest of the team, and this is what Brad Treliving feels is going to get them over the hump, then you've got to have guys that can accept their role and guys that will still continue to be great teammates. And I think you've got two of them. I think Oliver Shillington's going to take all of his experiences this year, and now he's going to experience another one where he's got some new teammates from other teams coming in that might fill his role on the team. How's he going to adapt to that? I think Stone has shown that he can adapt to that. But ultimately, as a player, you're proud, you want to play. It'd be naive to say that these guys are just, they're fine. They're going to be complete. No, they're not going to be fine. They're going to be professional, and they're going to prepare the right way and be ready for their next chance. And who knows, maybe it is, maybe someone like Forsberg is not going to be a direct insertion into the lineup. Maybe it's Michael Stone. Maybe they like the minutes he's playing, so he stays out there. I have no idea the way this is going to go, but if I'm the guy coming out of the lineup, I'm upset. It's just human nature.
I In hindsight, was D the biggest need that they had all along, and we were fooling ourselves if we thought it was right shot forward, Pat?
The right shot forward was like the sexy addition, right? It was the one.
And it might feel like a June major.
Well, if it was going to be a top six variety. If it was going to be the type of guy that they wanted in that 25-year-old range and either has term or isn't a pending unrestricted free agent come July, I just all along I felt that was less realistic at the deadline than it would be in the offseason. And that still remains the feel, is that this, it seems like a less realistic deal to make now, not impossible, but less realistic. Whereas at the draft or in the offseason, there's just far more available players, and you're talking about a much bigger pool of guys that you could potentially go and pluck from, right?
Never mind the additional, you know, increase in the cap, expiring contracts. There, it's just an easier time to make bigger deals, hockey deals done, right?
Mm-hmm.
Futures for presents are always easier deal to do this time of year. And if you're talking about a straight hockey deal, players for players, they seem to be in June.
And just to get your cap in order, to be able to wrap your head around that and not do something that's going to put you in a pickle. Like, it's, these things are so, I'm always impressed with you guys in here, just trying to keep a grasp on things and being able to understand who's coming in, who's going out, how they're going to get around this injured reserve, all that stuff. Like, man, to be a GM, you've got to have one heck of a team these days to piece everything together. Yep. So it's not, everybody would love to add a player. Everybody would love to, that's the easy part, kind of picking who, finding out, but the intricate stuff to make it actually happen is.
I find the whole thing really, it's fascinating, because on the one hand, last year, for instance, the Flames were number one in the Western Conference and only made the one tinkering move. They brought in a depth defenseman that could play in their third pairing. And the whole message was, we believe in you. We believe in what's in this room. We didn't want to mess with it. This year, they're not first place in the Western Conference. They're barely hanging onto a playoff spot. And they bring in a pair of depth defensemen, don't give up a ton of assets. And it's kind of like, all right, well, it's on you to show us. Like, I wonder how a locker room kind of feels about similar trade deadline ads in completely different situations in terms of where they are in the standings. You know, last year they were, you could have made the argument, well, yeah, now's the time that you do make a big time addition, and they didn't do it. And this year it was a whole lot more ambiguous as to which way they were going to go, because they're so tenuously in a playoff spot.
Yeah. And for me, if I look at both situations, if I have to pick one, it was last year. Last year's the year for me where if I'm the GM and I'm calling the shots, that's when I make the move.
And it was. It just didn't get through. That was the first and for a leak for Zucker that fell apart at the deadline. So what you're saying is
second in line for Mark Stone.
And that, exactly. And so what you're saying is exactly what the GM did try to do. It just fell apart.
And this year, you just can't.
I agree. I don't think you can. If I would view adding a significant part of the deadline to a team as something that the core has to earn. You have to prove that you're worthy of the expensive price to go add an impact player at the deadline. When you look at the teams that have done it, it makes sense. Tampa's done it. Boston's done it. Pittsburgh's done it. Even, you know, on a much smaller degree, the Edmonton Oilers have deserved to be bolstered with their strong play and their ability with, you know, outside of the superstars, a lot of role players get some good work done in a system that all of a sudden looks like something tangible. They earned the addition of three parts to that team. I don't think you can watch this year's Calgary Flames club and say this group deserved the high price of bringing in another impact player to join them.
I'll agree. You've got to be trending in the right direction. And last year, obviously, the Flames trended up, and it was that way the whole year. This year has had so many ups and downs. And you can't really put a finger on which way the trend is. But compared to last year, it's down, and it's way down. So you've got to be a team, for me, that's got the arrow pointed in the right direction if you're making additions and making a serious run at things.
And their arrow is kind of just pointed not up or down. It's kind of just...
It's been sideways this year. But again, in regards to last year, can you in any way try to spin it upwards?
Yeah. That's exactly where it was.
Maybe in the goaltending position, but if you're to evaluate each and every other spot, or say forwards and defense as a whole, How do you like those words, those descriptors?
That's some good sound effects, and it's apt, deserved. Those are appropriate. I mean, I just look at this last homestand that this club had with their playoff positioning on the line, their last opportunity to send a real message to their general manager. And I understand they beat Detroit yesterday, but man, you cannot lose to Detroit this time of year, the day before the deadline, and they didn't. So I'm going to move that one aside. You have three games at home. You play one of the worst defensive efforts of the season against Chicago. You play an airtight, low chances against great team game against Anaheim. And then you have a 3-1 lead on the top team in the NHL, and you can't hold it for longer than you can hold a hot potato. I feel like that homestand was the season completely epitomized in the sense that they flash the high end, they disappoint you in spots that they should be good, they tease you, they take it away. They look good, they look disinterested. They try hard and make it interesting, they fall just short. That homestand for me, I'm surprised they did as much as they did, to be honest, because I just don't think that they've proven to be worthy of the, you know, let's just bolster it. We're only one piece away. From what?
Yeah.
From getting in?
If it was a piece that was going to be here long term, that's a different story.
But the price of that's crazy. So if you're first on the table, let's say okay, we think we can get in with this one winger, but it's a first on our top prospect. They could still miss, and you're picks in the lottery. We've seen teams strike from beyond 10 in the lottery a few times now in the last few years. Imagine you giving up a top three pick for a team that missed the playoffs. That's the situation I think they were just going to avoid at all costs, and they did.
It's going to be really interesting to come up here. Just we're talking a little bit about the Flames season and just this last little snapshot of games, and I think you hit the nail on the head, Ryan. Well, if we look, they have been a better road team. So they're out on the road again, and they've started with a win, and hopefully they're going to have to gut out a few more against some very difficult teams.
Doesn't get easier, that's
for
sure. But
the scariest thing for me is March. I look at it, and I look at all those red dates and everything at home, and for me, the Flames at home this year have just, it has not been kind for some reason or other. They cannot get motivated in their own building, and it's going to be the tell-all and be-all for me.
You're going to have to figure it out. Yeah.
I really think they're going to get through this road trip at 500 or above, because I just think the urgency's there on the road, but for some reason, when they get in this building here, I don't know. It gives me a bad feeling. And so it's going to be March for me is going to be the one where I'm going to be glued and paying attention to what goes on here at the Saddle Dome.
They get back from this road trip. A game on the first is the finale of it, a matinee Sunday affair. That leaves 15 games on the schedules, men. 11 at home, 4 on the road. If they do not sort out their home ice play, they're going to be able to tee it up on April 6, 7, 8, which I don't think is top priority.
They did start the road trip with a win yesterday. That's how we'll end this segment by looking back. It is time for our game in a minute.
I mean, it's supposed to be time.
It's supposed to be.
Game in a minute.
I just got the reminder in my ear. Tell me when we're ready for the game in a minute, and we will do that. We do have to take care of some business and make that happen.
Quick 30-second thought on the victory yesterday. You, again, obviously were in hosting that thing. It probably wasn't pretty, but they did what they had to do. Is that fair?
It was a must win, or more so a can't lose.
Right.